Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever and wherever you might be listening. My name's Will Stevens, and you're listening to Backfield Banter, a podcast about baseball, training, and all things sports. We're here today with Zach McLeod, Bob Zimmerman, and the man of the hour, John Means.
Yeah, so we've got our ninth annual Pro Day coming up. So we started it for the amateurs, a chance for the, you know, best amateurs in the area in the Midwest to get together, place where all the scouts could get one spot, see everybody, a lead into the season as it gets going. It's always a pretty electric event, a lot of good arms, a lot of big bats, big scout presence. Almost every year we have at least one representative from every single organization at it. It's a chance for these guys to show their stuff that are aiming to get into the next level. It's just an exciting day. Some of our higher level guys, we are building specifically for that as they hit the ground running going into high school.
Could you talk about some of the alums?
Yeah, I mean, our first year we had Riley Pine, Joey Wentz, Nolan Williams was a third rounder, Nick Hansen was a third rounder. We've had a lot of draft picks through that. A lot of guys that have debuted in the major leagues, and then it's kind of evolved to where now it's started strictly like for amateurs, and now a lot of free agent guys throw at it.
Yeah, last year was my first year getting to watch it. It was a lot of fun. The radar gun will get lit up, and there's a lot of guys here. Yeah. On the strength conditioning side, we're just operating as normal, and then I'm assuming the throwing program is going normal for you guys as well.
Starting to ramp up. Guys are starting to touch the mound. It gets a little more fun the more progressed we get in the throwing.
John, why don't you start us off and tell us a little bit about growing up here in the Kansas City area?
Yeah, I grew up in Olathe. I went to Olathe East first and then transferred to Gardner halfway through my junior year. Always enjoyed baseball. Wasn't athletic enough for the other sports, so just stuck to baseball and didn't play basketball, football. I played 1 year of football. It was eighth grade, B team quarterback. We went undefeated, just let you know.
Dual threat, pocket passer.
You weren't D-end with your friend?
No. I was, so part of the story, I was super short growing up. I was the smallest kid in my grade all growing up. I had a really late growth spurt, like junior year. In high school, I was 5'4". And yeah, I was 5'4", not fast, not athletic, and so baseball was my route. So decided to stick with that. Ended up going to Fort Scott, stayed local for junior college, and went off to West Virginia after that.
You were probably pretty used to throwing in front of scouts. The big name in the area at the time was Bubba Starling. That was your teammate. I remember always playing you guys, and there were always scouts there with guns. And, you know, I remember the first time I was like, oh, everybody's heard of this kid, Bubba, like, probably doesn't throw that hard. It was like 92, the first one. I was like, okay, here we go. He's a freshman in high school, and he's 92.
Yeah, like I said, I was kind of a later bloomer. So junior year and senior year is when I played varsity first time. That was one of the reasons I moved to Gardner was at Olathe East. I was on D team first and then C team on my sophomore year. Never even made it to JV at Olathe East. So I went to Gardner. I moved down a level to be able to play varsity baseball. And then I think I was All-State both years. We obviously had a lot of scouts of the games, and you know, that was part of the reason, just, you know, get college scouting too. And I remember one specific game we were playing Blue Valley West, and Colin Wiles was pitching to, was drafted in the first round by the Rangers, and then we had Bubba, and so we had, I think there was like 30, you know, every team was there watching us. That was when I filled out my first questionnaire. The Braves gave me a questionnaire and I framed it. And I was like, this is might never happen again. And after that, we unfortunately lost in the first round both years I was at Gardner.
Which is wild because you had two big leaguers.
Yeah, it was not great. So did not quite make it past there. There was a Kansas-Missouri All-Star game that I was reserved for and then ended up playing in. When I was pitching, I came off the field. My phone was buzzing off the hook, and it was in my bag underneath the bench. I'm like, what is going on? Something wrong. And I go to my phone, and I saw the text from the scout. It was Chris Knobenshue from the Braves. Hey, John, congratulations. We draft you in the 46th round. I couldn't stop smiling. I was the happiest person on the planet. That was the best draft experience, because I didn't expect to get drafted at all. I was the 46th round. My dad came down to the dugout, and he was hyping me up. He's like, did you see? And I was like, yeah, that's all. Like, just losing my mind. But yeah, that was a fun time. I mean, and I was actually going to take it. I was going to take the draft in the 46th round, because I mean, I was going to junior college. I was going to Fort Scott, and I'm like, I might never get an opportunity again. That scout had come and watched me pitch in a summer ball game. Best game ever, like I'd ever thrown up to that point. I touched 89. I had never gotten anywhere close to that.
Which I want to remind kids, 89 was super hard 10 years ago. So I always say 90 back then is like 95 now, just to give everybody a gauge if you're a high school kid listening to this.
Which made it even crazier because Bubba was up to 96. We had faced Blue Valley our first game of the year. It was Ryan Stanek versus Bubba Starling. Yeah. It was 96 versus 96. And we're like, what is going on?
What made you end up not taking the slot?
After that game, it was best game I'd thrown up to that point. I was pumped. Scout was pumped. He's like, I just need to see you throw another bullpen. It was like 4 days later, and my arm was hanging. I don't know if it was tendon. I don't know what I had exactly. It was my shoulder pain, and I'm like playing catch with my dad, and I'm like, I can barely get the ball to you. So we told him, we're like, can we move the bullpen back a little bit? Arm's not feeling so great. And he goes, just go to college. We're not going to offer you much. If we were to offer you, just go to college. It was the best thing that could have happened to me for him to say, just go. As an 18-year-old drafted in the 46th round, getting no money, I probably would have been out of baseball within a couple of years. But it was a blessing in disguise, for sure.
So Fort Scott, talk about that recruiting process. Did you have any D1 offers out of high school?
No. D1 offers. I had a couple of Division III offers, mostly junior colleges.
The grades to get in there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Nice. I did. I had a nice mid-three GPA, good enough.
Yeah.
26 on the ACT.
Okay. Not bad.
Yeah.
So I went JUCO, and, being drafted and then going into junior college, you're supposed to be pretty good, right? Yeah. That fall, I was horrible. I had like a 6 ERA. They're like, who is this kid? Like, I was terrible. We were supposed to be good. We weren't. It didn't end up very good, but I'd always liked Fort Scott. I liked the coach and feel of the place. It was me and Caleb from Gardner, both went Fort Scott. But
and the guy he's referencing, I played in college with a mutual friend that we both have.
Yeah. And so we went there, and I come in, I was like, this is junior college, just got drafted. My ego was through the roof, and I got humbled real quick.
Well, part of it's Fort Scott's a little bit of a bandbox out there too.
Yeah. So. I mean, it didn't matter if I was in Fort Scott or if I was in Longview. It did not matter. Wherever I was at for fall ball, we got crushed.
So not a fall American.
No, I was the opposite of a fall American. I could not figure it out in the fall. But so I started off at Fort Scott. I was a midweek starter, which basically meant I was pitching against NAIA school JV teams.
For guys out there that don't know, a lot of D2s and NAIs will have JV teams, and then the junior college will play midweeks against them. And it's kind of like a recruiting type thing for these four-year schools, and it gets other guys on the roster at the junior college level innings on the mound, or extra at-bats, extra reps, because when you're going to a JUCO, I mean, you're probably raw and need experience, so they're just trying to pack the week with games, so...
That was my role, was I was midweek. And
Tuesday
so
starter.
It was the Tuesday starter. And people don't realize we have 4 games on the weekend in junior college. So we had 4 weekend starters.
Yeah.
And I was not one of those guys. So I was kind of low on the depth chart there. To make it even worse, we start off the season 0-20.
Oh, my Lord.
In conference play. 0-20. We don't win a midweek game.
Yeah, you are.
But as far as the conference games, we're going 0-20 to start the season. It was not going well for the Fort Scott Greyhounds, and we struggled. And so it got to the point where we had a sophomore pitcher, weekend starter, get fed up at practice. He's like, I'm done. I'm out of here. I'm going to my school. He leaves practice, starts packing his stuff up in the dorm. And we have a coach that goes in and tries to like stop him, like, hey, don't do that. Just at least talk to coach before you leave. And he comes in to the office. I wasn't there, obviously, but says what he needs to say. He gets suspended for 1 week. Okay. For 1 week. And that was my opportunity, was that 1 week. He was the weekend starter. I got to pitch. I pitch against Cowley County, who's one of the really better teams in that conference. And I think I threw a shutout against them and then pitched the rest of the season on the weekend. And that's how I got my foot in the door for that. And
season your opportunity.
Exactly. I finished the year strong and fully thought I was going to be back. I got calls in the summer. Most of them were like, okay, we're going to recruit you in the fall. But then West Virginia calls were like, do you want to come now? And I was like, yeah, I kind of do. I don't want to go back. So I ended up going to West Virginia and signing on my visit and
Okay.
Yeah, went there.
So high school draft pick.
Yeah.
Doesn't start off hot at the junior college level.
Doesn't start off hot at West Virginia either.
We'll get to West Virginia.
We'll get there.
So talk about how important that junior college experience was for you to prepare you to go to West Virginia.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I needed it. If I were to go to a big school in that fall, they would have just probably sent me to a junior college anyway. I recommend the JUCO route to everybody. Unless you're this big prospect that you know you're going to go and get playing time, at-bats and innings are so important in this game. And that's what scouts want to see. They want to see you try to, you know, develop, and they want some stats on paper. Especially if you're not going out of the draft in high school as like an 18, 19-year-old kid, you want to develop, you want to get innings. So I recommend it to everybody. I mean, it helped me. And like I said, I was a late bloomer, so it helped me kind of get my feet under me a little bit of learning how to, you know, pitch with this new body that isn't 5'4". I definitely recommend it to most kids coming out of high school, especially in Kansas. I mean, we have so much opportunity for that here. We have so many junior colleges in Kansas to where I talk to guys on the East Coast and they don't even know junior colleges exist.
Yeah, it's so all they go D3 to like out there.
Yeah, D3, D1. Exactly. And so even when you're going there, maybe you're not even getting playing time, or you're not. I guess with the transfer portal now, that maybe those smaller schools make a little bit more sense. But back when I was playing, it was like if you went to a D3, you were there. You know, transferring was still pretty hard. But
yeah, and I think the biggest thing, a lot of these schools use JUCO guys to bring into play right away, because it's hard to give an 18-year-old scholarship to sit on the bench. And so it's way easier to give a JUCO guy that's got 400 at-bats under his belt between the 2 years, because you know what you're going to get. I'm a big proponent like you. I think JUCO is really, really good for guys.
It just helps you grind it too. I mean, it's different when you go to like a D1 and you're pampered that was first year or two. You get the nice gear. Like in junior college, you're not getting anything.
Yeah, here's two t-shirts,
you're doing all the field work. You're doing all, everything is on you. You learn how to grow up. I definitely needed that as well.
Yeah, Bob, maybe you can chime in.
I mean, I agree totally. And especially with some of like the new rules that are coming into play, like JUCO is even that much more attractive now that guys are getting 3 years of eligibility with it. You look at like the rate at which freshmen actually play when they go to these big schools, and it's alarmingly low. And so now the ego is telling you to go to these big schools versus like what's actually going to get you better and develop you.
Yeah.
And I mean, for a majority of guys, like JUCO is that route. And I know you went to JUCO.
There's a ton of big leaguers that went to JUCO, like ton.
You know why? Because it's hard to replace playing time.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, like, Can we get Will to chime in here too? Will went to D1.
Yeah.
And then transferred to a JUCO.
Iowa Western, right? And then, which is a powerhouse, by the way.
Back to D1. But like, how much more did you get development-wise just from reps in that year you were at JUCO versus your first year at Division I?
Yeah, it's not comparable. And I think too, like junior college, everybody that's been there's a culture. I think Division I baseball is similar to Pro Bowl. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a fair statement, but like culture-wise, I was never on a team in Division I where it was the same culture as JUCO, where everybody wants everybody to succeed.
I think it's just a good level to play at, because it's raw hitting coach, right? Like where you're part of your job is to scout the pitchers. I always made a joke, like, especially when we go down to Oklahoma, because the wind's blowing like 50 miles an hour out half the time. So it's like, man, if this guy's got a 5 ERA, he's probably a dude. Like, and so like stats are a little inflated and stuff like that, but it's because you're getting a bunch of high school kids that have only played high school baseball, and now they're facing actual college players. It's harder at the 4 year level as a coach to be like, yeah, you know what, we're gonna play John. He's 89. Like, he might get hit, and we're gonna lose this game, but we're gonna play him anyways. Like, that's not how that operates, because you get fired if you lose the games. Mm-hmm. And whenever we have guys in top flight or on the pitching side with Bob, you can go and walk on at places, and that's fine if you want to bet Danny did it. But a lot of times, like, junior college is a better route than walking on, in my opinion, because you're going to get to play, and more than likely those walk-on offers are still going to be there after 2 years.
That's the biggest thing is, like, whoever's offering you out of high school is probably still going to be offering you after junior college. Like, you're only very, very, very rarely is it going to, like, those offers going to go away. Like, it's only going to go up with those years of experience.
Yeah, especially if you're doing what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And honestly, when you go to college, you're just going to get better because you start practicing every day. So, like, just based on that, you're going to get a lot better.
It doesn't seem like any rules yeah. in the practice list.
Junior college is
like, hold on.
The junior college, is the Wild West.
Yeah,
right?
You could be there all morning time.
Allegedly.
Allegedly, John. Come on.
So you're going to West Virginia. Talk about that. You said it was a little bit of a rocky start.
Yeah, you know, it was, I mean, obviously, culture shift. I'm going out east, but first time away from home, really, because Fort Scott was an hour away from where I grew up, so easy drive home if I wanted to. Now I'm out in West Virginia, so I know nobody out here. It's going from 900 students at Fort Scott to 30,000 in West Virginia, and kind of a culture shock. I thought I wanted to do exercise physiology. A semester into that, I was sure, I did not want to do exercise physiology.
It's anatomy and physiology.
Like, oh my God. And it was everything. It was biochem, all of it. Just going from junior college education, which very important.
Smaller classrooms, all that kind of stuff.
I was overwhelmed, you know, whatever. And I
made a business decision.
Was also, yeah, exactly. I went sports management after that. And,
athlete major.
We actually had a athletic coaching education, ACE. That was one of them too that a lot of guys did, which was good. But
as a major?
As a mate.
Oh,
yeah,
I'm not aware of that.
ACE. Yeah. Yep. Maybe only West Virginia has it. I don't know.
Okay.
But,
Will, what was your major?
It changed like 3 times. Every single school I transferred to, I lost credits. So it started.
That's what happened. I had to cram all of these classes in the exercise physiology in one semester that I had to catch up. And I got like D's. And
So much for that academic weapon there.
Yeah, I mean, I still finished with over a 3 GPA. I think it was a mid 3, honestly. I had like a 4.0 at Fort Scott, obviously. But. But that was another thing about Fort Scott is we cared a lot about education. So it was like everybody that left JUCO has such a good start going into the 4-year school. Cause I mean, at least at Fort Scott, we had mandatory study hall, mandatory, like cared a lot about academics, and it's, you just get all those classes out of the way. It's easier. And you go into those 4 years with a 3.9 or whatever you have.
Well, cushion. I think you're a very humble guy. Cause you're like, I wasn't that good, you know, whatever. Fort Scott, you had like a 1-2 ERA and 42 innings and 49 punch-outs. So obviously you did pretty well there.
I finished well. I told you I finished well.
And then first year at West Virginia, you said started a little rocky.
Like when I was in the fall with exercise, I was also really bad on the field. And so it was just bad all around. But I was just getting crushed. And everybody's like, who is this kid? But ended up pitching decently well. Junior year, and I didn't pitch at all the first week of the season. Like, we played 4 games on a weekend series, did not pitch once, and then we had 4 games the second week, and then I pitched against, I think it was Maine was my first one, and did really well, and then was a starter the rest of the season.
Oh, how were you guys at West Virginia?
So my first year was the first year of like a new regime of coaches too. Okay. So they were kind of trying to turn the program around. It was also their first year in the Big 12. So it was kind of like a lot going on, a lot of change. We were pretty good. We'd win some big games and, you know, lose some others. We were kind of middle of the road, I think, for the most part.
Did you do summer ball at all?
Yeah. So that was kind of when I don't know, popped off a little bit. The summer ball after my freshman year, I went up to New York and did pretty well. And that's also where I got recruited by West Virginia. Like, he came out and saw me pitch and I was doing pretty well. It was the perfect game, collegiate league, up there in upstate New York.
Yep.
And then after my sophomore year, I had a temp contract at Cape. And so I was out there kind of my tryout. And for people that don't know, like, a temp contract, you get like a 10-day temporary contract for the Cape Cod League. I mean, most people on the team are there and they have like they're there. Like, they don't have the temp, but for guys like, you know, not as high level, you get a temporary contract. So I had a roommate in the Cape who drove all the way from California and got in 2 games and had to go, got sent home. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, it's that kind of cutthroat. And so I was a little worried that was going to happen to me. Additionally, it did not. And I stayed and ended up pitching really well. That was like my best summer pitching. My junior year, like, I wasn't throwing very hard either. I was like 86, 87, not throwing very hard. In the Cape, I was like 90, 92, 93, learned how to kind of gain some velo and pitch well. And so that was kind of when I got on the draft map. Did okay. my junior year.
You always say that, but dude, you had a 3-1 ERA in 69 innings. Like your
my junior year?
No, that was your second year at West Virginia.
Yeah. Really?
What'd you think it was?
I thought it was worse than that. I started off really hot, and I was like, okay, I'm going to be a first rounder.
It always comes back to the ego.
The ego is like, okay, here we go. I'm going to be, I'm going to go super hot. I just shoved in the cave. I'm going to be the first round, get $1 million. It hit me hard at the end of the season. So at the end of the season, this is when me and Frank played each other.
Yeah.
Like, that was this literally faced off against each other. Same game. Same game at West Virginia. Like, we were doing really well, and we're like, okay, we need to win 2 of the last 12 games to make a regional. We went 1-11, I think. We missed it by one game. That was my downfall, was the last 4 games of the year. I was giving up like 12 hits a game, just absolutely just getting crushed. And I was like shoving up to that point. Like I said, I was like, all right, I'm good. And then all of a sudden the wheels fell off and I was like spraying balls. I had no idea where the ball was going. And when I threw it over the plate, it would get crushed. And so like I get to the point where we got swept for 3 series straight, I think it was. Go into the Big 12 tournament and I don't throw at all. And so like we have 3 weekend starters. We played 3 games in the tournament and I didn't pitch at all, not one of those games. And I was supposed to be like, you know, one of the higher prospects on our team. And so all these scouts are like, what's wrong? Are you hurt? Or no, I'm just not doing very well. I'm just not doing good. So that was why I brought up the first draft story, is because then the draft rolls around. All the scouts are like 6 through 10. Like 6 through 10, you'll go somewhere in there. And I'm sitting there watching. Obviously day 1, not going to go. But day 2, I was watching round 4, round 5, round 6, round 7, round 8. Watched all go down all towards the end and never go in the second day. And the end of the second day is the 10th round. And so I end up going like the first part of the 3rd day in the 11th round. And it was one of those, like, obviously I'm really like excited to get drafted, but I was way more pumped to get drafted in the 46th round than I was the 11th round, because I'm like,
you had no expectations.
Exactly. And then so it's, it was this bittersweet moment. Like, of course, like, okay, I'm excited and I knew nothing about Baltimore, but I was like, this, you know, this would be cool. And obviously, like, next step of the process. But, it's crazy how much the perspective changes.
Before we move on to your pro career, you can talk about you and Frank's head-to-head duel.
Yeah, apparently it didn't go very well. I know it didn't go well for me. Apparently it didn't go well for him either. But I think that it was kind of a high-scoring game. And obviously we ended up losing because we got swept, I think, from every series out. But I think, because Frank was shoving that whole year. I mean, he was one of the best pitchers in the Big 12. We got him, but they got me. And so that was one of those, I think I was out really early in the game. They're like, okay, we can't lose this game. Get him out of here and let's try and bring in some bullpen guys. And
yeah, I think Frank told me it was like a 12-10 game because he said he never lost on a Sunday. He goes, I got annihilated, but I still did not lose.
Annihilated on the other side.
Got this in the game. Did my part.
All right, so you get drafted. Looks like you head to rookie ball for a little bit and then go to low A.
Did the rookie ball thing. It was, most guys kind of go in, they'll throw a couple outings in rookie ball, especially like college guys that get drafted, and then you go off to short season. It's different now. They got rid of one of the teams, but yeah, you go short season, then low A, double A, triple A. But you start off in short season. My first outing was, I was in the bullpen and Kevin Gausman was doing a rehab start. And so I had to come in after Kevin Gausman, and he was, I mean, this one he was throwing 97 to 100. Like, he hit 99 that day, and I'm like, well, I don't have a chance. This is what these guys look like. Like, these are, and so I'm coming in, and I do really well because they're out front of everything. I mean, they are reaching. I was also not throwing very hard. I was probably like 87, 88. I had a lot of spurts of like throwing really slow, but yeah, I was not throwing hard. They ended up doing decently well that short season, and then the next year starting low A, and I was there pretty much the whole season in beautiful Salisbury, Maryland. That was kind of the beginning of like analytics a little bit. It was like when we started to like gauge spin rate, and that was like all we had was spin rate. I mean, we had no idea how to read it. We had no idea. They just know this is what your spin rate is.
Is it good or useful? We don't know.
No idea. Well, what they told me was, So you either wanted it to be, so this is the average. The average spin rate was like 2,200 or something like that. And they're like, you either want to be really above it or really below it. And you are 2,200. And I'm like, awesome. So my fastball sucks. Not only am I throwing 87, 88, but I have super average spin rate. But then I find out that 2,200, but I have 22 inches of vert because of the axis and everything. But that's obviously way
down the line.
Way farther down the line.
So everybody's like, how is this guy getting outs? His fastball has... is slow.
Yeah, it's, yeah, it's average yeah. spin rate. Don't be average like old Johnny over there. But I ended up throwing pretty well there and then going to high A and getting crushed when I got sent up. Can you have stats on that?
Yeah, I do. 19 innings, 6.4 ERA.
There you go.
Yeah,
that's got a little crushed.
Tough. But, okay, crushed. That time your gauge was correct.
Yes, I'll give that one I got crushed. Another funny story. At stint up in high A, I gave a home run to my bullpen catcher in Baltimore. And he has the video like so quick on his phone. He's our bullpen. He never made it to the big league. I don't know if he made it past high A, but he has his homer off me. And he was looking one day. He's like, I wonder if I ever faced John. And he goes, oh my gosh, I have a homer. Looks up the video and he brings it up all the time. But it's Ben Carhart. Shout out, Ben Carhart. Shout out.
What are kind of the levels and the jump?
My best level for sure was high A that second year. I did really well. I think it was there for like a month and a half or something like that, and then got up to double A, and then in double A struggled again. What was that, 5.5?
4.69. So not as bad. Okay. As
they called up today.
And so I went up to double A. Yeah, I made it bigger than it should have been probably, but I could not figure out double A. I was there for 3 seasons technically. Yes, so I was there. So I got up and I was like the second person in our draft class to get up to double A. The high A coach was like, hey man, you're on the fast track. Keep doing what you're doing. And in double A, it was just like.
It was the draft thing again, wasn't it?
Yeah. There's a common theme in my career. So I got up there and it can't figure it out. I'm like, okay, like you said, I'll figure it out next year. Don't really figure it out next year.
I mean, it's not bad, dude. Like
that was when my FIP was actually good. One time, that was like the one time it was actually like, FIP is not my friend, but that one I was getting.
Go ahead and tell everybody fielding independent pitching, correct?
Yes.
It's like if you take the field.
It's a dumb stat in my opinion, but whatever. I mean, if you go 7 innings and 2 runs, but 2 solo home runs, your FIP sucks. And it's like 7 innings, 2 runs, is a great outing.
Every stat is flawed.
But it's like, okay, just because I give up 2 solo shots doesn't mean my outing's over. I don't know. Anyway, that's another touchy subject for me.
Won't bring up the FIP anymore, Joe.
No FIP.
Don't get me started.
Yeah, when he starts throwing his bullpen, just no FIP. Don't do anything about FIP.
The second year in double A, again, struggled. And then they, sent me back there for a third season in double A. And that was kind of when I was like, all right, I don't know if baseball is like, I was kind of out on it. I made a LinkedIn. I was starting to like search for other opportunities because I was like, it was like another 4. It was a lot.
4-3, which is not the end of the world. A lot of people.
But I mean, when you're throwing 80 and you're not punching anybody out.
Okay, like, that's fair.
ERA was the king of stats. And
yeah.
So it was like that third season. I was there for another month or month and a half. And then finally I get called in the coach's office. And I remember he told me, he goes, yeah, you've really paid your dues here. It's time that you go up there and have change of scenery or something like that. And it wasn't like, congratulations, you've earned this. It was, yeah.
There's probably need somebody to get out that we want to call up to double A. And we're going to ship you.
And they had guys in AAA.
I should have sent out and I had a conversation with me. Get a promotion.
Yeah. Also, I should say, we had the 30th ranked org in prospects. Every year I was in the minor leagues. We didn't have the most talented farm system.
So it was less the coaching and more about, you don't have to say yes or no, but maybe the front office wasn't hitting on their draft picks.
Yeah. And we didn't really have the technology that everybody else did. We weren't very forward thinking.
Yeah.
And so we weren't really developing like we probably should have been. Get up to AAA. And I remember the pitching philosophy when I was coming up was fastballs and changeups at the knees. That's all that matters. So we just try to hit knees for everything. Like we couldn't go up in the zone. Like, that was against the rules. We had certain coaches that would influence it, but
messaging.
The message was knees. And so it was like knees. And I would crush the knees. Like I could throw the ball where I needed to go. And I was throwing balls to knees and I was getting peppered. And it wasn't like corner. They're like, as long as it's down, it's down. I was just peppering middle down and it was just teeing off.
Was just holding plenty
off. And I'm like, I can't get any farther down. Like, what I'm trying to bring the ball
into my barrel.
Yeah. They're like, it's not down enough. It's not down enough. And I was like, I can't go any farther. Right. Yeah, they're just teeing off on me. And so I remember going to AAA and on this drive, because it was like a 4-hour drive, and I load up and go to AAA. I remember convincing myself, I am going to throw up in the zone. I'm no more listening to this. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm like talking to myself, giving myself like, you are doing this. You are throwing up in the zone. And I go to AAA, and I pitched pretty well in AAA, throwing up in the zone. And I'm striking out way more guys. I was getting a ton of swing and miss. I'm like, I've just unlocked the cheat code. Like, that's it. Throw up in the zone. Throw up in the zone. And I ended up finishing that season okay. Like, I would go ahead and say it. What was it? 3-4-8,
111 innings. You're always kind of an innings eater. You throw a ton of innings.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Throw pretty well in AAA. And this is 2018. We had, I think, by the end of the season, the Orioles had like 45 wins. Like, one of the worst seasons in Orioles history. And so it's like anybody who had a heartbeat, it seemed like, was going up.
Hey.
And so I'm sitting there like, I was hoping to get my chance, right? Yeah. And so the whole season, I'm sitting there, I'm like,
I have a heartbeat.
Yeah. I'm not doing that bad. And so maybe I'll have a chance. And the whole season, it was like, and we had some guys throwing really, really well. They got chance, obviously. And guys kept getting called up. And not me, not me, not me. And the end of the season, I didn't get called up of AAA season. And so I never got called up. I went home, was home for 2 weeks, and didn't touch a baseball, didn't throw, didn't do anything. And I get a call, and they're like, hey, have you been throwing? Have you been working out? And I just lied. Like, I was like, yeah, I've been throwing every day, just staying ready. And I'm ready to go. You need me, I'm ready to go. And so he's like, okay, and we talked to the GM. We might need you. Oh, usually they have like a taxi squad. Yeah. Is that what they call it? Or what they call it? And they send guys to Florida to stay warmed up. And they
stay hockey.
Yeah, exactly. And so they didn't do that this year. They're like, everybody just go home. I don't know if it was just everybody was pissed or what, but it was like no stay hot camp at all. And they're like, we're just going to roll with what we got. And then guys started getting hurt. And I'm sitting at home and get the call. And they're like, okay, we're going to send you to Florida. We're going to have you warm back up and, you know, get ready to go. And so I go down there. It's me and another guy who was with us, Dylan Tate. And it was just us two that go down there. And he's like a prospect. He was drafted like 4th overall, big prospect. We just traded for him for the Yankees. And so he's like first in line probably. And then it's me. We both go down there. He also wasn't throwing much. And so he goes down there and he's like, I'm not doing it. Like, he doesn't feel good. Like, he starts throwing and doesn't feel good. He's like, I'm not feeling good. I'm going to not do this. I'm out.
And so it doesn't matter.
Just me down there. I was the last person standing down in Florida. And I'm throwing. And like a couple weeks go by and I'm like, I don't know if this is going to happen. And then I get a notification. It was Alex Cobb has a blister. And then I get a call like right after I saw the notification. It's like, hey, you're going to meet the club and at Boston, you're getting called up. And it's like, yeah, again, couldn't wipe the smile off my face. I was ecstatic.
Yep.
Got crushed in Boston.
I was going to say it, but I have the numbers here.
Sure, yeah. I threw one game. It was the last 7 games of the year I was up for. I pitched once, but yeah, I was up for the last 7 games.
What'd you learn from that experience?
Get cover first base. So,
yeah. Oh, goodness, John.
Yeah, I know. But just the golden rule. Let me run you through this debut. First inning, punch out my first guy.
Who was it?
Mitch Moreland.
Okay.
Punch him out, get 2 pop-ups in the infield. Like, okay, like, I got this. I got this.
Oh, there it is again.
And then
wait, so you go 1-2-3?
1-2-3.
First
inning. And I'm there, like you said, to eat innings. I am there to I come out of the bullpen. That was the first time I'd ever come out of the bullpen. We started someone that game who first time they've ever started. I'm like, could just start the game. And it's just like, and he doesn't make it out of the first inning. And it's,
so you're saying you guys should probably flip?
Yeah. What do we, I mean, But I mean, no one cared at that point. We had won 100, we had won 40 games, and it was like, let's just get out of here. Let's just figure out a way to get out. That was a rough start. I think when I went in the game, it was already like 6-0, and this was in like the second or third.
Hey, no pressure. Here we go. It's that midweek Tuesday.
So not only, yeah, this is 2018 Boston Red Sox. They won the World Series. Yeah, yeah. They was like one of the best teams of all time. Like every stat on the Jumbotron was like 290 with 45 homers and 1,000+ OPS.
And I'm like, just, David Ortiz, he's like 40. He can't be that good. Oh, he hit 40 home runs this year.
This team was not, I mean, insane.
Mookie Betts was on that team.
Oh, yeah. Mookie, JD Jackie Martinez, Jackie Bradley, Benintendi.
Yeah.
All of them. Like,
Xander Bogaerts, Rafael Devers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That team was incredible. I mean, they won 110 games. So, yeah, the first inning, great. 1-2-3. I got this. Ego up. Yep. And then it's about to get right back down. So the second inning, go, get one out, get two outs. So two outs, nobody on. Benintendi rolls one over to first base. I don't get over in time. And so I'm like running over there, don't get there. I'm like, okay, here we go. Lock it back in. Mookie Betts is up next. Double down the line. So second and third, I go JD Martinez, fastball in, off. Fastball in, off the plate, 2-0. I'm like, he doesn't think I'm going fastball again. He thinks I'm going changeup. I go fastball in, 460 over the Green Monster, 3-run homer, and then the wheels fall off. And yeah, so that one, I don't even remember what happened after that because it was, yeah, it wasn't just
blacked
great.
Out. After just that blacked out.
Hey, you got, like, Joey said the same thing. He goes to go, I got called up and I got crushed, but. It's your
you got it out of the way.
Yeah, you got it out of the way. You made your debut. And
it also made me realize that 88, 89 isn't going to play. So that's when I kind of went and figured out how to throw harder.
That's it for part one of this episode. Tune in next Tuesday for more insights and stories with John Means and the team at Backfield.